Hello and welcome to another episode of Season of the Witch with your hosts Rowan Oaken and Tess Lauren, the show where we spill some tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth.
Again, I have to go back to the fact that we all do things differently. Mm-hmm. The more so you get into your craft over the years, whether or not, like, there are certain groups, like in Wicca, for example, where you do follow some rules. But even then, there are witches that are kind of branching away from the idea and the base tones of what Wicca is. Mm-hmm. You also have the idea of a coven. And in a coven, a lot of the time, like, you know, you're a group of people with like-minded ideas. That's why you've created a coven. Separate from that, I think it's the individuality. And I also think that toxicity comes from people just wanting to stir the pot, and yes, they come in. It's just, that's what it is. And I think it's more prevalent in the witchcraft community because we don't take a lot of shit as a community. Mm-hmm. We came out as witches, which again, like I said, is already something that's very taboo in the world. And so again, with that, a lot of that sense, I'm going to say it with that sense of being weird and individual comes a lot of narcissism. And because that narcissism becomes massive and it explodes in the community because you have someone, again, that hierarchy system that thinks they're above somebody. Mm-hmm. They're popular. People love what they do. They've maybe got either in a physical community or on social media people really like them and they have a big following of people. And you come into the witchcraft as a new baby witch, you come into the community and you go, oh, I want to be like these people with all the followers that everybody likes. And that creates an ego in somebody, you know, and that ego, it manifests. And yes. I find those individuals, and I've seen it before, that feel like they're above, that narcissism comes into play, that ego comes into play, and then they start airing their dirty laundry out on social media and out in these communities that doesn't need to be aired in the first place, personal or witchcraft based.
Yes.
And that's where the toxicity comes into play. People start tagging people on social media, calling them out. They become bullies. They call other people bullies. They feel like they have they feel like they are right and they have a sense of right. And then people start calling them out and then they start feeling attacked and it becomes this vicious circle. Yes. Where someone who's not even involved in the situation can see it and is now involved in it.
Yes.
Do you know what? It's just, and it's the a thing lot.
This is absolutely not new either. You know, even looking at someone like Gerald Gardner and the people that he worked with, it's a thing. I think where you get to the point where you are encouraging other people's to change their belief systems, their ideas. You mm-hmm. see it with, you know, crazy Kool-Aid leaders. It's a thing that is. I don't know if the listeners understand that reference. That's quite a niche. Like Kool-Aid is in like the like, who do you know the person? Do you know the name of the person? I can't, like
James Warren Jones, Jim Jones.
There we go, Jim Jones.
Yeah, Jim Jones.
Yeah, drink the Kool-Aid. Oh, we'll go on the comet. Go live with the aliens. Peace be to us all. And
literally, and they all just died because they blindly followed this one man. To this ether of this heaven that they thought they would go to a different plane or something. I don't know the details, but I know what you're talking about. But that is it. There are parts of witchcraft that are very similar and border on cult-like activity. Yes. And that's not okay.
No.
That's where the power plays and the abuse come in as well.
Yes. I think the other thing as well is it's this confusion between, I'm really poking the bear today, is belief and reality. I think there's a very blurred line, especially in the witchcraft community, between belief and reality. Yes. We can have a belief system, but what is reality? And if everyone's got a different belief system, it then disrupts what we believe our reality to be. So actually someone saying, no, this is what I believe, disrupts your own reality. But the difficulty is that is just a belief. And that's maybe a really horribly shattering thing to say to everyone listening to the podcast, because our understanding of the spiritual universe is also tied up into our understanding of what we believe the reality to be, but it's all based on a belief system, not a testable thing that we can actually scientifically prove all the time. And I think that's one of the challenges is that distinction and that confusion. Let's talk hierarchies. Let's get into that.
Yeah.
So With social media, there's definitely a sense of hierarchy with influencers. Yes. I think that has created what would possibly have been our Jim Joneses. Yeah. We've now got everyone striving to be a good old Jim Jones, drinking that Kool-Aid. You know, come along, drink the Kool-Aid with me. Come join this and follow mm-hmm. me. Follow me for more. Like and subscribe.
And that's scary, because then you have those people, and I've experienced it. I've seen it. Unfortunately, recently, this isn't something that's just happened a couple years ago. This has been going on for years and years, especially Instagram and TikTok. You have people who come onto social media who have a large following, like you said, that sense of hierarchy and that sense of ego comes into play, and they lash out at somebody or a practice. And those people that praise them so much and follow them to the ends of the earth just end up blindly defending them without. They become sheep, and they start blindly defending them without having any opinion formed of their own, without knowing these individuals or this certain type of practice. And people get hurt. People get caught in the crossfire, and it just becomes messy. And that person at the top of the pyramid doesn't care. They don't care the destruction and downfall that they've created. They're in their own little world. They're like, whatever, they did it. I didn't do anything. And it's like, no, actually, you're the one who stirred the pot. You're the one who sat on your throne and told all these people without saying a word that it was okay to defend you. And that's disgusting, in my opinion. And it happens so often. And again, like you touched on a few minutes ago, I think it has to do with that sense of belief.
Yes. And you take responsibility for the platform. We'll kind of straddle the line on certain things and explain where something is perhaps our perspective, our opinion, and call out bullshit where we see it. But I think there's a way to do that. There is, and I think it's those situations where you see people sharing stories. I can't think of any specific phrases that we'd use, but like essentially go and send this person a particular amount of hate and grief and upset, get them blocked, get them taken off social media. That is bullying. That is absolutely bullying.
That is bullying. And a lot of the time, the person screaming about the bullying is the bullier. I think that was the stupidest sentence I've ever said out loud.
It makes sense to me. Maybe I'm the bully.
Someone claiming abuse is the abuser, basically, is where I was going with that. And I think if you have take it off of social media, this can be dealt with behind the scenes. It does not need to be brought to light in front of other people face to face. You don't need to air your dirty laundry by taking screenshots and putting them on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok. You don't need the cancel culture. The last few years has created again that idea that it's absolutely fine to just blast somebody out on social media, whether they've done wrong or not. It's not your place to put them on blast. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think there are times where there are moments where we should be?
If someone is berating you and someone is coming for you and creating a wave and a mountain of hate, then maybe have a sit down, video record, and explain your side of the story.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe to defend yourself. And that is the last resort. You fighting back with screenshots because they fought back with screenshots, you tagging them because they've tagged you. That's not the way to deal with things. No. Having an open and honest conversation, whether people believe you or not, is the best thing that you can do. Yes. If you need to sit down, make a YouTube video, a TikTok video, or sit down on live on Instagram to explain your side of the story, I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's only so much you can do without giving yourself a voice.
Yes. And I guess I was just also wondering whether there are times where certain behaviors need to be called out on social media.
Oh, God,
I think perhaps that there are moments, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, where perhaps people are being marginalized, shoved to the corners by certain peoples, and whether that actually needs a greater platform other than dealing with it with a direct message and saying, you know what you're doing here maybe is quite incorrect. Maybe that's the place where you start is to educate, not to discriminate. And you have that conversation first. And then if something kind of hits back from there, then perhaps that's the moment then you go and you start having larger, wider conversations. But the thing to remember is there's going to be absolutely ignorant assholes who, you know, probably you're not going to change their opinion anyway. And that, no. That's one of the difficulties.
You have to create boundaries, don't you?
You do.
You have to create boundaries and make sure that you're paying attention to what's going on.
Yes. Yes.
Because if you're only paying attention to one side, how are you going to open yourselves up to what someone else might be feeling? And it's a broader spectrum than just, oh, this person's upset. Why are they upset? Oh, this person said something about them.
Yes.
That's one bubble and that's one opinion that you might have. And you need to pay attention to all of it. And you definitely need to set boundaries for yourself in this community. Yeah. And learn to protect yourself. Yes. By setting those boundaries, because it's a dog eat dog world out there, my friend.
Yeah. What about in kind of daily practice? So not necessarily thinking about social media. And do you ever practice any kind of protection or binding work? Is that something you've used before? Bringing that in?
I have done one binding spell in my entire life.
Uh-huh.
And that was actually for a toxic situation.
Yep.
And I was at my wit's end. I didn't know what to do. I was working in, I was working at Lush. This is no secret. I don't work for them anymore. So I was working at Lush. I was a supervisor at Lush, and somebody who worked with us got promoted to a supervisor and was on the management team with us. Mm-hmm. And she was a bully. She mm-hmm. was a bully. And she would bully my staff and make them feel uncomfortable, berate them constantly. And the manager was away. So like we had to deal with this for weeks on end, and she had no idea what was going on. And basically what happened is I had to sit down with my manager when she came back as a supervisor, as these people were not only my colleagues, but my friends. Yes. And I had to sit down with her and be like, this person is hurting and upsetting these people on a huge level. They don't want to come into work. They're crying on the shop floor. Like, we need to deal with this. Yes. And she was like, oh my God. And so this girl took it upon herself to personally attack me for coming out about what she was doing. And she made a huge scene, huge, huge scene. And I was terrified. I was afraid that this person was going to come for me via social media or otherwise on a personal level. And so I did a binding spell, which included basically I took two sticks. This is going to sound really silly, but I took two sticks and I sat there with my intentions on them. And I took spider web, like cobweb, and I wrapped them around the sticks. Mm-hmm. Interesting,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
The idea that the spider web was strong enough to hold my intentions and mm-hmm. the sticks together. And then I burned them with a piece of paper with kind of like my protection spell on them.
Yes.
And that was kind of like, and that's like completely off the cuff. Like no one does that. But that was, I didn't know what I was doing. And that, but that, I felt like behind that it worked, and she left me alone.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's all down to that intention. What you're planting that seed of intention within you, and you've chosen and selected those correspondents that work with you to give you that confidence. That kind of like gives you that air of confidence to say, actually, leave me alone. Stand back. You know, I'm now protected and bound from that. I must admit, the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of binding, I think of the craft, binding Nancy.
Oh God, yes. Don't we all?
It's the first thing that comes to my head. I've only ever done one binding spell before, and it was very similar, but instead of cobweb, I used ivy. Thinking about the way that ivy kind of grows and wraps around. And I use sticks. Yeah, I use sticks.
Okay.
I've used kind of breaking spells before, so kind of thinking of knotting spells, tying knots together, and then over a candle burning that knot to create a separation.
Exactly. Yep.
That's kind of another one in terms of protection that I would use, but more around that saying, I feel like I'm kind of entangled or embroiled within either a situation or B, that person, and I want to be separated from that. I want to be removed mm-hmm. from that situation.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily preventing the person from doing something. It's giving me that distance to be moved away from that person. And I feel like that's quite a nice defensive, almost passive, but it's taking control of that situation, and it's not preventing anyone's or suppressing anyone's ability to do something. That said, I have no qualms with people doing any form of binding spell, especially if someone is causing harm to another. I definitely don't sit on that kind of love and light spectrum. I'm like, oh, you should never do that to someone. I'm like, yeah, but if someone really hurts someone.
It's the balance. It's my balance. Libra ass coming in with the balance. You know what I mean? Like, you got it. You can't have light without dark, my friend. It doesn't Absolutely. Work that way. Can't have the sun without the moon. You can't have yin without yang. And it just doesn't work that way. Mm. And if you believe that, that's totally cool. But within that love and light spectrum, there has to be a balance.
Like, but I feel like there's other like simple things that you can do as well. You know, even just around salt and just kind of seeing salt as kind of a cleansing aspect of protection. Of course, none of this should be a substitute for you being able to emancipate yourself from a situation yourself. Yeah. And you mentioned that. I think never underestimate your own personal power to take yourself out of a situation. I think sometimes magics can be used when you are actually powerless. And I think that's where I use magics the most, is where I feel like I don't have control of that situation and I need something to...
You're at your breaking point.
I was in a similar work situation. This is, well, we're 4 years ago now, in a similar work situation where it was an incredibly toxic environment. And I stood up for everyone in the workplace. And it was one of those situations where everyone in the staff room are having these conversations, oh, we need to stand up for ourselves. This is terrible where we're working. You know, I'm coming to work. And you know, one girl told me she was an NQT. She was coming in, a newly qualified teacher. She was coming in. She said, I was in my car and I just thought about driving off the bridge this morning because I just can't take it.
Oh my God.
And she was serious, deadly serious, tears in her eyes. And I just thought, and the worst part is she wasn't the first person to say something like that. So I was like, we need to say something. We need to stand up and say that the workload is ridiculous. We're working on weekends. We're working till 11 o'clock at night. And I know that is the teaching profession. There is an expectation that you work that amount. And I stood up in a meeting where we would be having more things put on top of us and we were all at breaking point. And I just said, no, we're not doing this. Everyone is at breaking point. You've got members of staff crying, you know, the people who would sooner injure themselves and be in hospital than come to work here. You need to have conversations with us about what needs to go into our workload before you introduce something. I was a bit more irate than that. That sounds like quite a calm way of saying it. But no, I was still quite calm. And I was very much told that the staff room was not, in a staff meeting, was not the forum to have those kinds of conversations. I got pulled into the office the next day by the head teacher. And, you know, I questioned, well, where is the forum to have a conversation about our collective workload other than a staff meeting where we're all together?
Thank you. Yes.
I was like, that actually is the forum. That is the place.
Where you're supposed to come up and talk about the issues is a staff meeting. That's what they're made for.
Yes. Like the terrible thing was I stood up for everyone and I'm looking around the room, really trying to rally everyone up to say, we're not going to do this. And that is down to hierarchy. It's down to this idea that one person can have control and power over so many people, but there's so much power in the individual. If every single individual rose up in that room and said, no, we're not doing this, there's nothing that person could do. What are they going to do? Yeah. Fire a staff force of 40 people. And I think that is one of the things that we forget actually is our own individual power. In that situation, I didn't have the power of the collective. I couldn't make the change. And that is where I moved to something that was a little bit more spiritual, a bit more cosmic, that to support me, because I didn't have the backing and support of everyone.
That's it. And you learn from those experiences where you try and stand up for a group or an individual, and then that group of people don't back you up and you take the fall for it. And then you have to kind of have that inner battle with yourself where you're like, you're anxious, you're stressed. Mm-hmm. You might lose your job. You might lose your house. You might lose a friend. It doesn't matter in that situation. Like, you're very much like, oh my God, like, what have I done? Mm-hmm. And you learn how to gauge whether or not to stand up or to walk away. And that's those battles that you fight on an individual basis tend to be the best learning curves for us, because, you know, especially when it comes to toxic situations, because we live and we learn and we figure out how to, again, set solid boundaries for ourselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think, well, boundaries are really difficult, especially in the workplace where you feel an obligation. You feel an obligation to tick that box because someone's paying your wage. So you feel that you have to break your boundaries down and almost become a different person and almost dehumanize yourself sometime. Be a robot. But I think if we can collectively show that we're not there for that, then that is where real difference can be made. But
exactly, yeah. But
trying to get that collective conscience to be raised is the problem. So we've talked about hierarchy. Mm-hmm. What was our other one? Gatekeeping.
Let's jump into gatekeeping. Like I said, I'm not trying to call out a specific group here, but one that comes to mind in the community, don't come for me, is traditional witchcraft, traditional witches. And I hate saying this, but there is a lot of community based around trad and traditional witchcraft where people in that group think the old school ways are better. And the individual idea of doing things like not using color associations is something that isn't okay. Understanding that, you know, you can be an individual is very difficult when you come into this practice because books tell you to use certain associations for things. We've talked about this so many times, and it's the gatekeeping that comes into play with a lot of traditional witchcraft where people think like, no, you can't do that. That's not how you do it. And it's like, it becomes you become kind of a shell of a person when it comes to that, because especially when you're new, because all these people are gatekeeping what you can and cannot do, and you just get overwhelmed. And
I'm gonna really stir the pot now, but how fucking moronic is the idea of traditional witchcraft, because so much of it is actually based on modern literature.
Thank you. Yes. I wasn't gonna fucking say it.
I'll take the fall for it. You know, I really will. You know, it's such an oxymoron. The idea of tradition, like, is it really?
What is that?
What
how
even
can something
is
be traditional?
Exactly. Traditional to who? Like, Western traditional, Eastern traditional, European.
It is a lot of it is Western, and that's the thing that people don't understand. A lot of it is Western, specifically
white.
Yes, thank you. White, very Caucasian.
Yes,
white. I'm like, how do I word this?
Yes, say it.
It is the Western. It is Western world. It is Western world witchcraft, and yes. A lot of people, you know, especially in this country, in England, there is this idea that traditional witchcraft is based off of certain things in history. Which we weren't there for.
Yes. Yes.
So how is it traditional? What is traditional? Someone give me what is the Google definition of traditional? I need to know. I'm gonna
like
Google
customary,
this.
How it's always been. And I think that is one of the greatest problems with taking something that's traditional, even if you look at other spiritual practices, that even something like Christianity, if you were to take things traditional by scripture, look at that's how many problems can come into place with a religion like Christianity. Traditional in the spiritualist community, especially with witchcraft, it's absolutely meaningless. I feel it's traditional for what? Traditional for who? You're going based off non-recorded illiterate societies.
And also this traditional witchcraft that people hold on to so dear is completely out of date and completely not okay anymore. We have changed and evolved you know, in regards to race, gender, sexuality. Yes. So traditional witchcraft holds on to beliefs that happened probably as much as they don't want to say it and they don't want to believe in it. These are traditions that are like 100 years old, for example. And in 100 years, a lot of shit's changed, my friend.
I want to add as well, who wrote that history? You know, you're looking at like, what was it?
Necronomicon? No, I'm just kidding. No.
the book by the kid. Oh, why can't we do names today?
Who are you talking about?
James? Is it James? King James the First?
No, James.
Kool-Aid.
Okay,
the guy who wrote the book, and he was a king, and he essentially wrote it to kill witches off. James the first.
King James?
Yeah.
James the first. Yeah. Okay. You were James. Yeah, we're right.
And it was, I'm sure the book was called like the Oh, bloody hell. If I've not got it written down, it just doesn't work, does it?
No.
But he wrote that book essentially so he could go and kill witches. That was why it was written. He was fascinated with it, and it was used to go around and to persecute and to murder women and men across the country.
Love that for him. What a vibe.
What a vibe. Nice. the reason why I'm saying that is, if we're basing our understanding in histories off traditional witchcraft, so mm-hmm. much of that has come from people looking to persecute witches.
Yes. Like, it's such a catch 22, and people don't realize there's like, it is, it's like, literally it folds back on itself, doesn't it? Yes. And it's just these people that stand up for this traditional idea of witchcraft and traditional practices don't even know what they're fighting for half the time.
No.
And it's so mundane, the things, just like, it's so stupid, a lot of the things. And completely, like, you know, nonsensical, the things that they fight against, you know. And I think the biggest thing that I see is associations for things, color and correspondences. And that's the thing that really, like, riles them up, is not using or doing something in a specific way. Like, oh, God, you didn't cast a circle. What the fuck are you doing? Like, oh, Jesus. Like, calling me out, like, you know,
bitch.
And keyboard warriors, man, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are. There's always going to be, or what you believe, there's always going to be that keyboard warrior. And a lot of them are traditional. It's driving me nuts. I said I wasn't going to call it a group, but I'm sorry. I just did. We just did.
There was another one that we wanted to raise today.
I was going to talk about the gatekeeping around closed practices.
Gatekeeping around closed practices. Now, this is a really interesting one. Yes. Really interesting one. I think if we go back to the show right in the beginning days, appropriation was definitely the buzzword 2 years ago, a year ago.
Yeah.
And I think my views have become a little bit more fluid since then.
Okay.
Oh, controversial.
Tell me now.
There's still some similar threads that fall through the line of appropriation and what you do with the closed practice. But I've perhaps got a different perspective on how you approach closed practices. Just because they're closed doesn't mean they're inaccessible. And I think that is something that has changed my perspective on things, is the difference between appropriating and appreciation. Mm-hmm. I understand, yes. However, I also understand that because of the concept closed doesn't mean that we can't be informed by, we can't talk to, we can't begin educate. To practice, we can't educate ourselves, go out and speak to someone, say, I am interested in this closed practice. I am not of this heritage.
Yes.
Would it be possible to begin to be educated, to learn about this? Because I would be interested in practicing this. And I know that is a point that's going to really upset a lot of people hearing that from me. Especially, you know, around Native American practices, voodoo practices. You look at some of the quite predominant voodoo writers and voodoo speakers, a lot of them are actually, you know, white people who do not have the particular lineage or ancestry, but talk quite wonderfully about how they've been educated by those people who are of that heritage history, so that they can be an advocate and share for it, but still retain that positioning of, yes, this isn't my heritage necessarily. However, I have been inducted into this closed practice. I do think there is a way to use and to share closed practices, but it is about education.
Yeah,
it's not about saying I can't get into it, or saying someone can't get into it. And that's the difficulty on social media. You don't know the narrative. You don't know what work someone has done behind it. You can't even assume someone's bloody heritage. Do you know what I mean?
No, you can't. No, absolutely. And I absolutely agree with you. And I think that is exactly what it is. It's about the basis of education. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I've experienced in regards to community, the community in closed practices, is right away, you can't practice it because you're not of that heritage. You can't even look at it because you're not of that heritage. You know, you can't speak about it. You can't do anything. And it's very much like, oh, okay. And that really, that it's, I've come to it as well, where that's really upset me. You know, I grew up in Canada around a huge Aboriginal community. And I had a boyfriend whose family was all Aboriginal. And, you know, I got to go and see a lot of their traditions, and I got to experience a lot of the things that they did in regards to like how each individual clan worked and stuff like that. And I really appreciated it. And there was a massive appreciation and love for the traditions that they were keeping on doing. And I feel like if, again, like said, if you ask, if you educate, if you speak to someone and have those conversations, and it's not necessarily that person with those traditions giving you the right or saying, giving you the green light and going like, okay, this is fine. But I feel like if you grew up in that environment, or you've become friends with someone in that environment, is it okay for someone who's not part of any of this to turn around and say, no, that's not okay, when they haven't involved themselves in anything, but they're an outsider. They have a perspective on the outside of seeing, and the gatekeeping, that's where the gatekeeping comes in, is someone who's not educated themselves, has not looked into it, but immediately is on the absolutely no, that's not okay line. And it's like, but you haven't put yourself in that position. You're fighting a fight for someone that might necessarily not agree with your opinion, who is part of that tradition. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
I do also feel like I need to address the elephant in the room. This is this two white witches talking about.
Living in England.
Two white bitches, witches living in England talking about clothes practices. Well, it's not something that necessarily I practice. You know, I have been interested in voodoo, especially West African voodoo. Yes. Especially with having a Sierra Leonean son, I feel that. I'm quite interested in that from that perspective of, you know, I have witchcraft within the home, but it's a very white Western Eurocentric craft. And I'm like, wouldn't it be nice to kind of have that blend for my son to see his West African heritage kind of within there? But then it's interesting because I'm like, do I have agency to represent a particular spiritual practice that is not part of my heritage, but it is kind of part of my cultural heritage now by having a son who is dual heritage, West African and white British. And one of the difficulties that I think it kind of teeters around and steps around is how is that then being used? What platform is that then giving? What platform is that taking away from someone?
Yeah.
You know, if you... This is really stupid what I'm going to say now, but there was a lot of controversy in, I don't know whether you watched the show, of RuPaul's Drag Race.
I love RuPaul's Drag Race.
So in the most recent,
popped out of the bag.
in the most recent series, you have a white straight male who is coming into a white straight cis male coming into Drag Race, doing drag, and a lot of toxicity within the Drag Race community, saying that you can't have this particular person on this show because it's actually taking away the platform of something which is essentially for a queer person. It's a queer art form. It's for the queer voices. And I think this particular drag queen did very well to stand back and actually say, you know, yes, I'm still here to elevate queer voices, but I'm here to be as an advocate and to support and to feed back into the idea of queerness as a spectrum. And that this probably seems a really silly way to start talking about Drag Race now, because Drag Race isn't a closed practice. But in many ways, in the forums and in the fan base, it does get perceived as a way that it is some form of queer closed practice.
Yeah. And
I think we need to kind of look at spiritual practices as a way to be able to enrich and to be able to educate ourselves. But it's not a buffet of things that we can go and snack on and use and represent.
Exactly. I agree. I totally agree with you. It isn't, you know, And it's difficult as well, like even coming to England and practicing witchcraft in England, there are a lot of things like Gaelic traditions, for example, that I feel uncomfortable even using because I'm not Irish, I'm not Scottish. There are a lot of things that I won't involve in my practice, not because... Basically, because again, there's that fear of offending someone. There's that fear of upsetting someone, which creates that toxicity because it holds you back as an individual, like an individual practitioner. But like, where is the line? Where do you draw the line? Like, I just, you know, there are people out there that just do it on a whim and have like no education basis on it. And then, yeah, maybe that's when we should have a delicate conversation with them and be like, well, maybe what you're doing isn't necessarily the right way to go about it.
Yes. It's when it's misrepresented as well. I think that that is the
misrepresentation. Yeah.
That or voodoo practices, for example, used and then guised under a white Western Eurocentric practice. I think that is...
I'm laughing because I'm thinking of me and my husband are rewatching Supernatural right now. And I was talking to my friend about this the other day, but my God, the like knowing what we know as witches and then watching a show based around the supernatural, God, it's so bad. The misrepresentation in those shows for things like hoodoo around satanic witchcraft, for example, are so misrepresented in Hollywood. And that's another thing, like people just see it on TV and think that it's okay that they can just like go to a crossroads or something, and like, you know what I mean, like it's not okay.
Well, look, historically the way that hoodoo voodoo practices are represented as kind of like the bad witchcraft.
Yeah, but it's no different than what we do, and we know that if we've educated ourselves.
That's why.
Thank you. It's because it's not light and fluffy. Everybody gets upset because bones and blood are used.
I'm saying like because it's black skinned.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, agreed.
It's come from black practices, so it is then
negative connotation.
It's demonized. Yeah. It becomes the dark witchcraft because it's ascribed to black skinned peoples.
Yeah. But also, like, it's not light and fluffy, like I said.
Yes.
Hoodoo and voodoo is not like reading a tarot card or having some pretty crystals in your collection. It's about the raw. It's about, you know, being raw and being, you know, exposed to these things. And it's traditional for what they had at the time as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that sometimes it's really difficult for people to accept that, oh yeah, like, oh God, like people use bones in their practice and spit and blood and bodily fluids and their sacrifice in some people's practices, you know, not necessarily just talking about hoodoo or voodoo, but there are practices out there that still do a lot of these things. Mexican American and Mexican practices as well. Like there's a lot of not nice stuff there. We've kind of, I don't know how to put it. We've kind of made everything really light and fluffy.
We've sanitized a lot of the craft, I think.
That's a good word for it. We've sanitized it. We've kind of put a veil over what witchcraft probably looked like back in the day when we didn't have all these fancy things that we were using, you know?
Yes. It's even like, you know, the way that we can access herbs now, just buying them dried and even quite cleansed and sanitized. The difference between when I go into my garden and I've got dirt underneath my fingernails and I'm digging something up, I've got a root and I'm cleaning it off. Like the real difference between that connection and something that's
exactly
completely awashed of the earth, I think has a certain resonance that you can't find. And I think as more of the Western craft moves forward, we're moving more towards a cleaner, polished, aesthetic-based craft.
Yeah. And I think, again, that like lack of, like you said, that lack of connection there. And that's what our craft is about. That is what witchcraft is about. It's about the connection with the earth and with ourselves and the things around us. And we do tend to lose that coming into the, again, like you said, the aesthetic way of doing witchcraft. And I'm not saying that that's wrong. If it works for you and you feel connected to that in a way, that's totally cool. But there is that time when sometimes I just want to run out into the rain. I just want to take my shoes off and run through a field. I want to dig up some roots. I want to lay down under the stars. You know, it's that raw emotion and that raw connection that a lot of us are missing. And I feel like, again, that's something that people can argue, and that's something that people can create a stigma against as well. Like, is that right? Is that wrong? It doesn't matter what you do. If it feels right to you, it's right to you. And that's where the protection and the identifying and paying attention comes in when it comes to these ideas of gatekeeping.
Just let bitches be witches.
Exactly. Fucking do what you want. You know what I mean? To a certain degree.
Yeah. As long as it's not harming anyone. Yeah.
No, as long as, yeah, exactly. As long as you're not harming yourself or anyone around you, or upsetting someone to that degree, I think it's fine to do what you want to do, man.
Yes.
Go out there. Do not let, and I've said this before, do not let the Regina Georges of the witchcraft community fucking come for you, all right?
Fugly sluts.
Fugly slut. Do not let them gaslight you. Do not let them abuse you.
No.
You've got this, witch. You've got it.
I think that's a fabulous note to end on. So where can the listeners of the show find you and send pictures of their dirty fingernails and them running out into the grasslands and getting their hair wet?
You can find me at The Obscure Witch on Instagram. That's the only platform I'm using at the moment. I'm not going to spell it out. You can find me.
You've sent out dirty loads now. We'll put it in the show notes.
I was going to say, am I in the show notes, Rowan? Have you put me in the show notes? What's happening here?
Okay. I don't even think I'm in the show notes.
How I don't do even know. It's fine. Don't worry. Where can they find your sassafrassy ass?
Oh, they can find my sassafrassy ass at SOTW with Rowan to carry on the conversation about being a hateful bitch.
Are you the Regina George?
Just being a Regina George. You can come and help fill out my burn book where we talk sass about people. And if you want to meet more like-minded cheesy witches, there's also the Cheese Witch Coven as well to go and talk cheese and witchcraft and other things.
Loved that for you. Moment.
Oh, well, don't forget to stay witchy, bitchy,
sassy, and classy.